Now we're off and running, and I'll put you right back where you were. Oops. Now, I have to inform who's ever listening on the other end 50 years from now that this is an interview. No, we'll get it. You're the more important here. And this is a very sensitive mic, by the way. This is an interview on the 21st of June, 1985, with Mr. Hugh Kitchen by Dr. Roy at the University of Victoria. Now, sir, let's get some background music. Aside from being the brother of gentleman.
I went out to India, 1931, as an assistant lawyer in a big firm there. And at that stage, there was no Indian Navy as it's known now. It's merely a survey and hydrographic institution with about two ships and about 10 officers. By about 1938 or 9, when it was obvious that there was going to be trouble, they decided to start up the Royal Indian Naval Volunteer Reserve, which I joined in June 1939.
Well, where were you stationed then? Or at least
I was in Calcutta. And I went over to Bombay to see the chap who was doing the recruiting.
Right.
He was a bit loath to take me on, as I was 32 at the time, but they did. And I say the expansion was pretty rapid. The man I saw was a commander. When I got to Bombay, when I got called up eventually, he was a commodore, and that was the sort of thing that went on. People who'd been, I say, commanders or commodores, but still.
Let me interrupt again. Why the Navy? For example, George was in the Army. Why did you pick the Navy?
Well, ever since I was about 7 and could read, the one thing I wanted to do was to go into the Navy. And of course, having been in China as a boy, there's no hope of, getting into the Navy in 1920 meant you had to be 12 and have all the subjects. Well, of course, I hadn't, and been abroad. Anyway, I'd wanted to go in the Navy, and here's my chance at last.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, well, I'd say the expansion was tremendous. And originally, I think, I say, except for these sort of survey ships, there wasn't anything, but they were given some sloops. And by the time of the Java Sea, there were four of them operating and did quite well. They all came back. But as far as I was concerned, I had to do my mind sweeping to begin with, about 3 months, and then 3 months in a corvette. Well, it was called a corvette. It was actually a converted diesel ship of about 800 tons. She was only built to travel in the, what we call the cold weather, that's to say when there wasn't a monsoon. But by the time they put some 4.7-inch guns high up on her, she used to roll right over. I'm certain there were occasions when she did roll over. When I was on board, she eventually did go turn turtle.
Oh my God. Well, when you first went in, again, I have to try and think 50 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get a little bit more of the background. You go down, you go to Bombay, you join up. Now, you join up in the ranks, you join up as a cadet?
No, as an officer.
But as an officer?
Oh, yeah. And they gave
right off?
Right off like that, yeah. They were very short of anyone.
Yeah.
And although my knowledge of the Navy ships was merely, say, sailing small boats. I mean, I was never questioning anything else about it.
Could you navigate?
Well, they gave us, that's one of the wonders of that age. After we'd had our sort of mind sweeping and 3 months at sea, we then did courses on signaling, ASDIC, navigation, seamanship, some others, I've forgotten them, but the point was, The chap who taught us navigation, he was a sort of master mariner with an extra ticket, I forget. And he said, look, if you don't ask me questions, I'll teach you to navigate in 3 weeks. And he did. It was amazing how that man put it across. No questions, just do what I tell you. And I say we could navigate up to a point, very often to a cocked hat. You know, when you try and take a picture and you get a cocked hat, you're not very sure where you are then.
But it sounds as if you're sort of learning on the job, or was there a group of you, a class of you?
There were classes of about 20, 25 officers going through at a time.
So So in the first several months then, after you joined up, you'd be on shore in a naval...
Originally, you went on the minesweeper. There was a sweat channel out of Bombay, 30 miles long. And any ship, once they got to sweat channel buoy one, they knew once they got there, they could come in safe if they kept safe within 100 yards of the buoy, because they were swept every day. And I never saw a mine at all, but there were U-boats operating off there, and they might have been mine there for all they knew. And of course, all the traffic has to come right down to a point to get anywhere near Bombay.
Yeah.
I say, we did 3 months minesweeping, then 3 months as a sort of officers under training on this ship, about 800 tons called Dipper Bharti.
Did you have, incidentally, an Indian crew or a... Or
the crew were all Indian, yeah.
I see.
And there were a few Indian officers who volunteered for the... but by and large, it was all European.
I see. Yeah. In other words, the senior ranks, the, what do you call them, warrant officers, all that sort of thing, would be European.
Oh, they're all Indian to a man.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, in the bigger ships, the smaller ones that I went to, Coastal Forces, they're to start with, we had, this is jumping the gun a bit. Can I sort of go on?
Mm-hmm.
What I want to say, why the Indian Marine was so small was that between the wars, it was called merely the Indian Marine.
Mm-hmm.
They had two or three ships in the Mediterranean in the 1418 war, but they were the survivors of an amazing people who used to be called the Bombay Buccaneers. When in 1680-odd, Charles II married Catherine of Braganza, Bombay was handed over as part of the dowry. So that meant that the East India Company, which up to that date had been purely merchant,
mm-hmm.
then began to sort of be able to build forts and things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big gang of pirates about midway between Bombay and Colombo who used to go in and try and get hold of these East Indiamen and any other ships that came away. So the East India Company decided to build their own navy.
Ah, yeah.
And they did. They weren't big ships. They were frigates, sort of 30, 32, 36 guns. But they sort of made life quite safe. And eventually there were so few pirates left, these people turned to piracy themselves, and they were called the Bombay Buccaneers. But, I mean, anyway, that is how the sort of Indian navy started. But it was always been a marine up to then,
mm-hmm.
not a navy. It was only in about 38 or 9 they decided to switch it over.
Mm-hmm.
And although at the moment they've dropped the Royal, the Indian Navy, they have an aircraft carrier which we gave them. It's a very old one, sister ship of the one in the Falklands, it's called something like that. They have one of the three cruisers that were at the River Plate battle. I can't remember whether it's Ajax or Achilles. But they have sort of what you might say almost a big ship navy.
I see.
Antiquated a bit now.
Yeah.
But anyway. Going back, as far as I was concerned, when war broke out, I happened to be in England, and I expected to be called up at once, but they deferred it. They were going on the age basis. The
mm-hmm.
people who were 21 got called first, so it wasn't until 1941 that I got called up.
I see.
Say after 6 months sort of doing part minesweeping, part sort of seamanship, as it were, then I did my courses, and... after that, I went back to the same ship that I'd been training in called Dipper Bharti, D-I-P-A-V-A-T-I, named after a river goddess, one of the numerous goddesses
mm-hmm.
in the Hindu pantheon. And I enjoyed it there, but that ship, I say, wasn't built for the monsoon, my golly. I remember when I went to her, I think I weighed, say, 13 stone. At the end of about 3 months, I weighed about 11. I mean, I couldn't keep any food down at all, except the middle watch.
Yeah.
12 to 4, midday, I had the meal brought up on deck. I'd keep that down. Otherwise, it just went straight off. She really did roll.
Just hold it here a minute.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little bit confused. You were, in 1941, you were in England.
In 1939, I was in England.
In 39?
In 1940, I was in England.
Yeah.
Came out in a convoy back to India.
Ah, I see. So that when you were called up,
I wasn't called up till long after I got back to India.
I see.
I say that.
I'm sorry. No. Yeah, got it. Yeah.
Went out in convoy and was no trouble with that convoy. Early 1940, there was no trouble then.
Mm-hmm.
I was very happy in the ship Devavati, and then a sort of notice was circulated around saying that there was a job which they couldn't talk about, but if anyone would like to apply for it, so I did, and this was the formation of the coastal forces in India. You know, they sent out from England, America, the Bosphorus, they sent out 24 MTBs.
Oh, yeah.
70-foot MTBs.
Yeah.
The next to arrive are what they call the harbor defense motor launchers. They're 70-foot jobs. Diesel engines do about 12 knots.
Mm-hmm.
They had depth charges on, but everyone knew that with the waters around Bombay being so shallow, if you drop one, you'd blow yourself up. You couldn't get away at 12 knots. But I never tried, so that was all right. But
yeah.
Then in between were what they call the Fairmile motor launches, known as MLs, 112-foot wooden-built jobs.
Mm-hmm.
With petrol engines. Could go for those days 22-23 knots, and they could cruise at 18.
Hang on, just for one moment. Yeah, sorry.
So then I was told that I'd been selected for coastal forces. I spent about, well, the first thing to do, you had to build somewhere to get the ships. We had a rough ride, some of them. In fact, two were sunk, but they all came out of deck cargo, you see, from on Liberty ships and things like that from the
mm-hmm.
States. And when eventually they arrived, there were only 22 of them. So instead of having three flotillas of eight boats each, the 16th,
mm-hmm.
17th, and 18th, they decided to form two flotillas, each of 11 boats. And that was the 16th and 17th.
Well, now, what rank would you be?
I was a lieutenant.
Still a lieutenant,
yeah.
At this time.
Mm-hmm.
There being what the Army would call a full lieutenant. In other words, you weren't a sub-lieutenant.
No,
or
a full lieutenant.
Yeah, and you had roughly how much experience by this time?
Well, merely in
minesweepers yeah.
and the other boat, about
yeah.
maybe 7 months, 8 months altogether.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, all the theory in the world, but the practice, damn
yeah.
all, when it came to warfare.
Right.
And at any rate, The MTBs were crewed and officered by every form of, well, the crews are all what we call hostility ratings in England. In other words, they were signed up for the duration, or they were
yeah.
reservists, people who had been
yeah.
in the Navy and been called up under the 12-year rule.
Yeah.
And but they were all the sort of senior petty officers, the engine room rating, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that they would train their Indian counterparts so that in a couple of years' time, say, the RN ratings would go back to England or wherever they were needed, and
yeah.
their places would be taken by the Indians.
Yeah.
And the Indians were quick off the mark. They had a sort of engineering school going in about mid-41, and I must say they were training out some quite good people who could take over
mm-hmm.
Engine room mechanics and PRAs.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I say the first to arrive with the MTBs, we had to make a base for them, and that was at just south of Bombay at an island called Trombay, which is now where the Indian nuclear everything goes on.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we hacked a sort of place out of the jungle there. We put up workshops, a torpedo workshop, a lovely place being, because they were air-conditioned, nothing else was, so on.
Nice, yeah.
Well, it was an ideal place. It was so ideal that I forget who was running the sort of naval air service. There wasn't an Indian one, but the Catalinas came, and they could sort of scour all over the
mm-hmm.
ocean from that place. Ideal for small boats, about 8 foot of water, no more, and the first MTBs arrived out. About the middle of 43, and of course they had to be sort of had a look at and the rest of it, but they were certainly the 17th was down at Trincomalee around about September, October 43, and by which time they were, and the other flotilla went up to Madras, the 16th, they were the only offensive weapon left, navally speaking, in the whole of India, because you see the Japs ran everything at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
The Bay of Bengal they ran, they'd had a go at Colombo Harbour, hoping to catch Somerville there, but he'd had wind of it. Anyway, he was over in Kilindini on the African shore, 2,000 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So they were literally the only things, had the Japs tried to come, that could have had a go at them.
Yeah.
Luckily, they were otherwise engaged,
yes,
and didn't.
Very much, mm-hmm. Very much.
But then slowly we began to build up. Oh, then a South African ML flotilla arrived, and they did very good work. The nearest Japanese were, of course, I don't know if you know, but Chittagong is sort of end
part. Well, just hang on for 1 second. Okay.
Yes, well, sort of November 1943 was the first time that we had coastal forces up on the Burma coast, and they were based at Chittagong originally. Oh, I should have mentioned, of course, we had a base ship which had been converted from a merchant ship. She was, so that when the people had been at sea some while, not had a bath or anything like that, they could come ashore and come on the ship and have it.
Mm-hmm.
And they had another tender called the Blindjo, which was a small Dutch ship which had got away from the Java Sea battles, all right. So those two ships were sent up to Chittagong, and it was purely MLs at that. The MTBs didn't go up there, the motor launches went. There was a South African flotilla and two Indian flotillas, and they had several brushes with the Japanese and managed to sort of sink a few of their. They had sort of more like E-boats, like the German type of E-boat than what we called an ML. Anyway, they sank two or three and tried to take some prisoners, but the Japanese officer in the water shot any man who put his hands out for scramble netting. And in the end, they did get one Japanese who'd been an engineer officer in one of the Maru boats, one of their merchant ships going to and from Europe. He'd got a little more civilized, shall we say, and he talked like a bird. I gather they sent him up to Delhi, where he really did say everything he knew. But there were what we call shooting seasons up there. You couldn't operate in the monsoon. So really speaking, between November and about February was the only time there was any naval activity in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
This was before the Arakan campaign began, because of course until Lord Mountbatten came out and sort of managed to get people to shake themselves loose and remember the Forgotten Army, there was merely a holding operation at that stage. As soon as the men and the supplies started rolling out, then the coastal forces crept down the coast and got to Akiab, Mongdor, Cox's Bazaar. That's where we were stationed for a while. I'm sorry to say it, but I think we had more casualties from our own RAF than we did from the enemy. Put it this way, I don't think their pilots knew how to navigate. They certainly couldn't understand what a recognition signal was. And we got people killed by them far more than we did by the Japs. But then that was just... we weren't the only people. and every year, come February, all these little ships would creep round the coast and get into Calcutta or Vizagapatam, which was a port which had been developed for them, or further down Madras, and that's where they'd sort of spend 8 months of the year before going back up to the coast again.
I see. Now, you...
Help. Not easily.
You just want to tell him, I'll call you back.
Yeah.
And then you call him back in 2 hours and you say, what are you phoning about? Sorry about that.
No, I mean, but yeah. that book, I flipped through it quick, doesn't mention the Navy. I don't see why they should, because it's about a time when, I mean, it was the military they were pushing down.
Yeah.
And their right flank was guarded by the MLs and the HTMLs. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's never any action at that stage. They haven't got any sea forces, small boats left, so they just went away. I mean, mm-hmm. At that stage, when this was going on, the coastal forces were merely used for dropping people behind the lines.
They'd
go in and pick them up again.
Yeah.
They dropped them in the Andamans about a bit further away, and so it went on. But no, when the period that book's about, the naval activity was really confined to sort of shooting up anyone who showed his nose on the shore and dropping people in land.
Well, now, your main concern, presumably, was keeping this area, the Bay of Bengal, clear of any enemy aircraft or...
The Japs were so... Yeah, well, aircraft.
Not aircraft, but Navy.
They did have a go at us, but yeah. We managed to dodge them while they were hit once or twice or nothing.
Yeah.
But, that was merely to keep the right flank of the army free.
Yeah.
And, I say, if there happened to be any Japanese position that was strategically on the shore, then they were bombarded. But mm-hmm. otherwise, the Navy and the coastal forces at that stage just were sort of coast watchers and droppers of people behind the lines.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have, with the MTBs, now you said that you had mines, you had that capability, but what about, did you have any capability to discover submarines? In other words, did you have the Aztec?
Oh, yeah, we had very fine Aztec. Aztec.
Because, in the Canadian Navy, this is one of the big problems that we faced, is that we didn't have it until about 1943.
I mean, you had a lot of ships by then. Remember, we only had four sloops and converted ships. I suppose there were about maybe 10, 12 ships that had it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was good Aztec. We could ping on anything.
Yeah.
We had good practice because a few Dutch submarines got away from the Java Sea and
yeah.
came into Bombay, and there were people we practiced on.
I see.
And trouble was the water around there, they had these different layers, and you've got
yep.
what we call a Doppler effect.
That's right.
I mean, twice we thought we got a sub, and let go eight, I think, and up came stingrays about the size of this room, a trail of them going along. I mean, usually people got an awful bottle if you let go of those things unnecessarily, but they agreed both times that we were right, that it was a perfect trace and should have
yes.
been let go, but I say all that came up was dead fish.
Yeah. Oh, crikey.
No, Aztec was good then, and I mean, this may be diverting a bit, but have you heard of the raid on Goa? You know, Goa is a Portuguese
yes.
possession.
Yeah.
Well, three German merchantmen had put in there 2 or 3 days before the war was declared. They'd been told
mm-hmm.
that, to get
right.
out of.
Yeah.
One of them they knew had been strengthened in Hamburg 6 months before the war to take up the 6-inch guns. In
yeah.
other words, the fear was she might be a merchant raider.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what really got them going was they couldn't understand how, I mean, when the ships from Bombay were routed to Aden or wherever it was, they got sunk, couldn't make it out. And then someone found out that the radio transmissions from Goa were much louder and stronger, or however it is, than the
mm-hmm.
wireless phone. And
oh.
Surigao, which of course Portuguese was neutral,
yeah.
and they found that one of these German merchantmen had got a very powerful transmitting and receiving center. They managed to check back to Delhi and found that a clerk in the shipping department was passing them the information, which is why these things were being met and sunk. And so question came what to do. Goa was neutral. They couldn't invade the damn place as India did a few years later.
Yeah.
So someone up in Delhi got a brilliant idea that perhaps if he went down to Calcutta he could get a few of the people who hadn't gone to the war interested in it. And there was a cavalry regiment to which I belonged, the Calcutta Light Horse. They got about 30 people from the Light Horse who went direct. They were trained what to do, and they sent a sandhop. You know, the Hoogly silts up so fast, they got the sandhop is working at every sandbar.
Yeah.
Sandhopper were sent down, 3,000 miles from Calcutta down the tip of India and up to Bombay, well, not quite to Bombay. They got somewhere about 100 miles south of Goa, and these 30 people who had been trained boarded the sandhopper. She then sailed into Goa harbour. Before that, they made intense preparations to try and lull the suspicions of the Germans, but unfortunately, earlier on, someone had tried to bribe one of the captains to, you know, give his boat up. Well, he'd reported it, so the result was they'd put tins of kerosene and inflammable stuff all over the ships to blow them up rather than be captured, because they fancied it. This sandhopper then put into the harbour with these 30 people on board and sort of anchored for the night, as it were, and rather caused a bit of consternation at that stage as the two Portuguese cruisers sailed into the harbour, and of course they got out of the way. But the point was, as soon as it was dark, these 30 people got into their little rubber boats, rowed across to these German ships. The prime target was Uhrenfels, which was the one that had the big wireless on board, and the three people climbed up there and managed to blow their way into the wireless room and blow that up, so at least that wasn't going to transmit no more. And meanwhile, on shore, the people, the secret, whoever they were, the Secret Service from Delhi, had arranged a real binge for, they didn't send, the Governor General had been, of Goa, had been bribed to ask everybody on the ships to come ashore and have a whale of a time, all on the government and the rest of it. Well, quite a lot of the people were ashore. Anyway, the upshot was that these three German ships and an Itai that was there as well, they all set fire to themselves, and in the meantime these 30 people got on their sandhopper, skedaddled out of the harbour and went into Bombay, and to this day they won't give the names. Of course, it was piracy, you see, if you go in a neutral place. So, but luckily, every year still we have a Light Horse reunion in London, 26th of May. You get these crooks coming along.
Were you involved in that?
I was at sea at the time. I knew nothing about it. But
We
used to go outside Goa just to show there was something there. And about every other time, one of our cruisers, Glasgow, would be with us so that the people we were merely trying to keep them in. But no one knew that they were the people who were transmitting all this information. Anyway,
isn't that lovely?
Yeah, it was.
Isn't that lovely?
I say.
Oh, beautiful. Well, did you have any encounters yourself in the Bay of Bengal with your water torpedo boats or anything like that?
No,
escaped that.
Yeah.
No, very fortunate.
No,
very fortunate. Especially when
after the. The November of 43, there was no more trouble on that Burma coast, I mean, sea-wise.
Yeah.
And people merely, kept the right flank and dropped people behind the lines. And
did you ever do any of that sort of work?
No. You see, I was then, 35 or 6, and they reckon I was getting too old, so then they put me on the staff and sent me down to Colombo, where I must say it was fine seeing old Lord Mountbatten come down. He never came down from Kandy, was up in the hills in Colombo, about 50 miles. Whenever he came down, he always had the most six gorgeous-looking wrens. I mean, people wondered how the hell, why he should keep all the good-looking wrens up there.
Well, what did you do down in Colombo?
I was staff officer personnel for Coastal Forces, which by then was growing leaps and bounds, you see. D-Day was at over. I mean, although we didn't mop up the German light forces for a long time, the point was they were so insignificant that they were sending out flotilla after flotilla from England through the Med, of course, Italy, Apache, And what had been an essentially Indian coastal forces, and maybe what we have, 5 flotillas, 40 MLs, we had about 70, 80 harbour MLs and a 22 MTB. What had been a small navy, maybe 100, a small coastal force navy of 110 boats. These flotillas were coming out so darn fast that, we naturally all thought Japan was the object that it would have been.
Yeah.
But, and they were getting all ready for an attempt on the Andaman Islands, some islands in between India and Burma, when the first bomb went and that was that.
So you know, we have a fellow here at the university who is with the motor torpedo boats.
Was his name McElhagger? I remember we had a Canadian.
No.
We had a Canadian VR op. We had a most motley collection in Indian coastal forces. I mean, there were a few Indian officers.
This fellow was British.
British, yeah.
He's out here now. Crikey, what's his name? EFG, Graduate Studies. I can see his face so easily.
How old is he? Is he
taller? Oh, he'd be about 63, 64, 65. Sam Macy. M-A-C-E-Y. And he was British.
Well, if he'd been in the first sort of 100 boats, I would have known him because we knew each other. I mean, but if he was in one of these massive things, they sort of said it was almost as one line of coastal craft coming out from Jib as far as Aden. I mean, they were coming in.
Good Lord. Well, what did you do after the war? You presumably didn't.
I went back as a lawyer.
You went back in law. I see. I see. Well, you would be going back. Presumably, you'd be in India at the time when the changeover began.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that must have been fun and games.
It was. I mean, the great tragedy there was that, Mountbatten was a wonderful man in many respects, but when he made up his mind, that was made up. When the government gave him, say, till, I think they gave him about 18 months to, quit, he decided to do it in 6. Well, of course, they weren't ready for it, and our troops weren't allowed to help, and there was just murder left, right, and center. No one knows how many people lost their lives. I reckon between 2 and 3 million as a result of that. There was no ill will to us whatsoever, either in Pakistan or India. I mean, I think the government did the right thing to get out when they did, but if only they just sort of left it another year.